We've been planning this camping trip on Kazmaj Mountain for days. 3 days of mountain air, crackling fires, too many snacks, and probably more beer. It had been the perfect send-off to our college days, me and Henry. Our first proper trip, and man, it was a good one. But now it was Sunday night, office tomorrow and still an hour left of driving. It was about 8 p.m. and I was driving. The road was visible by the headlights and the full moon. It was a remote area with dense jungle on both sides, and the nearest city was at least 45 kilometers away. We were chatting with some music playing low, and then we saw her from a good distance. What caught my eye was her sweatshirt, bright orange, practically glowing with our headlights like a reflector. As we got closer, we could see she had a backpack on and was definitely waving that universal hitchhiker symbol, thumb out. "Whoa, slow down," Henry said, pointing. "Someone's walking." "Man, I don't know," I muttered. "It's pretty remote. Remember those stories about those teenagers a few years back? But Henry, he's always been the more carefree, it'll be fine kind of guy." He insisted. "Ah, come on. What's the worst that could happen? Looks like she needs help." So I slowed the car and pulled over near her. She was young, blonde, and pretty cute, with a cargo backpack hanging over one shoulder. She looked exhausted, but a wave of relief spread across her face as Henry hopped out of the passenger seat. "Hey, everything all right?" he asked. She explained she was heading to the nearest motel, about 8 kilometers away. Then she added, "I'm a solo traveler." Before she could even ask, Henry gestured to the back seat. "Hop in, we're heading that way." So there she was, sitting in the back seat. And the first thing she did, despite the chill night, was roll her window down. Strange, but I didn't say anything. Henry, in the front, started trying to make conversation. He found out she was supposedly 18, though honestly, she didn't look a day over 15. As he chatted, they glanced in the rearview mirror. She had something small in her hand, a capsule, and she swallowed it quickly. I didn't think much of it then. Maybe a painkiller, travel sickness pill, who knows. About a minute later, she grabbed her stomach and said, "Oh, could you please stop the car? I'm not feeling okay." I looked in the mirror to confirm it. Yes, her face had gone pale, with sweat on her forehead. "Pull over, man," Henry said, and I did to avoid a mess in the car. I pulled over. She barely made it out before she puked onto the grass. Henry got out, offering her some water from a bottle as I instructed. I stayed in the driver's seat, and the engine was off now. That's when I saw them in my side mirror. Two dark figures. They were moving slowly towards the car from the tree line, like they were trying to stay hidden in the shadows. And they were carrying something. Long, dark shapes. They looked like axes. "Henry," I hissed, my voice tight. He saw them, too. His eyes widened, and he made a move to get back into the car. But the girl wasn't so sick anymore. She grabbed his arm, her grip surprisingly strong. She yelled something in a language I didn't recognize. It wasn't English, but clearly a command to the approaching men. Something like, "Come fast." I screamed, "Henry, get in," my hand already on the gearbox. Suddenly, another man, appearing from the front of the car. Out of nowhere, he ran straight at us and threw an egg which exploded against the windshield. A disgusting, yolky mess, instantly obscuring most of my vision. There were 3, maybe 4 of them now, faces hidden by bandanas, still around 30 steps away from the car. I'd already started the engine, but I could barely see the road. A loud shattering sound from the back as one of them swung an axe on the rear window. Henry kicked out hard at the girl, breaking her grip, and jumped into the passenger seat. Henry was shouting, looking back. "Go, go, go. They're coming from the back." I kicked the accelerator. "Drive straight, just drive straight," he screamed again, his voice raw with panic. From my side, I could barely see a damn thing, just blurry shapes through the eggy mess. Henry was directing the way. The speed was over 110 kilometers per hour. Just then, one more man in a black vest, face hidden like the others, came in front of us. and he swung his long bamboo cane and smashed one of our headlights. But we dashed from the other side of the man. And finally, we were clear. Looking in the rearview mirror for a split second, I saw them, those men, standing there on the side of the road, with the girl in the orange sweatshirt, just standing, watching us go. We escaped. The silence in the car for the next hour was heavy. I've known Henry since our college days, but I'd never, ever seen him that scared. He was pale, shaking, and utterly silent for a long time after that. The next morning, before heading to the office, we went straight to the police station. We told them everything, every detail we could remember. We even handed over the backpack she left in my car. They took our statements, said they'd look into it, and would contact us if they found anything. But it's been a week now. Not a word. No update.
This is something that was super traumatic for me, but it was never discussed again in my household. I was talking with my mom about it the other night, and she didn't say much. I thought I would share my thoughts with you all. When I was 13, I got a Dell desktop for school. The internet was fairly new for me back in 2003. AOL and MySpace, Yahoo Messenger, and AOL chat rooms. AOL chat rooms were where I went. I was a shy, overweight kid back then. Still shy to this day, but online, I could be anyone. I could say anything. It was amazing. I discovered so many things when I got the internet. If I could be anyone, so could someone else. Thus, I met one 27-year-old man. One night I logged on. The AOL dial-up sound still makes me feel uneasy. I was sitting in my cold, dark kitchen. The computer was here so I could be monitored. It was just me and my mom, though, and she was always working, so no one ever really monitored me. Plus, she had no idea how to use a computer, so I got away with a lot. I was bored, so I hopped into an AOL chat room, lurked for a bit, and put that I was 15. Really only being 13 at the time, but saying I was 15 made me feel so much more mature. Private message incoming. Hey, my name is Rob, where are you from? And that's how it started. I told him where I was from and that I was in high school, which wasn't a lie. My school was from 7th to 12th grade. You? 19, male, New York. Aw man, was it cool to be talking to an older guy, and he was cute. Honestly, I don't really remember much. Maybe I blanked it out, or maybe my memory is just shot. I do remember emails back and forth, the occasional phone call. I remember finding out he was talking to another girl, and I wanted to break things off, but he begged and pleaded until I caved. Then he asked to meet. I was nervous. He had never asked for a pic, and never really asked for much from me. Just the emails back and forth, phone call a day, but somehow he made me feel safe, made me feel wanted and cared for. He drove from New York to West Virginia one day. My mom worked right beside my house, so he parked about a quarter mile away and took the back alley to enter my house. My friend was with me when he showed up, but she was scared when she saw him and ran out the back door. I maybe should have taken a hint from that, but I just stood on the back porch with my head down. I was given a hug as he led me inside. Not even 5 minutes after being there, sitting on the couch, did he move things further, then further, even into my bedroom. I won't get into the details on what happened next. I assume most can guess. After that, he left, with instructions to get in his car after I get off the school bus, and we would go on a date. I had no idea where he was staying. I lived extremely far in the country, an hour's drive from the closest hotel. The next day, I get ready for school and ride the bus for the 45-minute drive, and as soon as I hop off in the school parking lot, I get directly into his car. Nobody noticed. No one said anything. We drive around. Never go on a date. Just finds different places to park so that he can use me. I noticed a photo of another young girl, maybe 15 or 16, in the visor of his car. I question him, man, to believe him when he tells me it's his cousin. Believe him when I question why his hairline is receding so much. Also believe him when he tells me I can't see his driver's license because he left it in the hotel. And I believed him when he said he loved me. I get dropped back off at school. Super sad that he was going back home, with promises that he will call again. Again, everything feels fuzzy. I can't remember many emotions from this time. I do remember that a few days later, my mom said she found out I skipped school with a man, that I was never to see him again, and that was that. I do remember sending an email and a late night phone call. I remember saying I wish I could just live with you, and him suggesting to come get me. Days later, by the time he made the drive again, I was feeling iffy about leaving my mom. I loved her after all. I didn't think things through. I didn't put much thought into anything, really. Packed a few clothes in a suitcase. That is one of my sharpest memories. I felt bad that he drove 8 hours to get me, so I left in the middle of the night. Got in the car with him and his cousin, and he got in the back seat with me. He proceeded to use me while his cousin drove, then got back in the front seat. This happened a few times between my home and his. The drive took forever. I had nothing to drink. I was offered nothing when they got something. They stopped to nap at a rest stop, and I attempted to call my mom, which was disabled on her phone. I dug around for some change to get something to drink, but couldn't afford anything in the convenience store, so I drank out of the truck stop sink. Hours later, we park a block from his house while he runs to get something. I'm sitting in the back seat, waking up from a nap, when around 8 or so men and women in black suits surround the car, screaming for us to get out with our hands up. My first thought was, shit. First 10 minutes in New York and I'm already being robbed. I'm terrified. I get out and a man pulls me over to the curb while the other officers force his cousin onto the ground. All the while they're asking my name and age. I am put in the back of an unmarked car, driven to the NY Police Department. Past reporters, cameras, and news trucks. Snuck into the back of the station where I see Robin handcuffed for the last time. And for unloved 14-year-old me, this was devastating. I am taken into a room and questioned for hours. I am then taken to the hospital, then a hotel where a nice woman brings me Taco Bell and stays with me as I fall asleep. The next day, two FBI officers escort me home on a plane, where I get off and I'm greeted by police officers, my mother, and a horde of news reporters. I later found out that when my mom reported me missing, the police didn't want to do much. They didn't even take the picture of me. She had his license plate number. She remembers seeing his car parked by the road at that first meeting. She took note since it was an out-of-state car. Thanks to her being vigilant, I do find this is the only reason I'm alive today. The police said they would look into it, but that wasn't enough for my mom. She contacted a family friend who in turn contacted the governor of West Virginia, who in turn made the police look further into it. After they ran the license plate number, they looked into the man and found out who he was. That was when they issued an Amber Alert. Noting that I was in extreme danger, my cousin told my mom that he looked at Rob's rap sheet, and it was a mile long, but I wouldn't tell my mother what was on it, for fear of scaring her more. I never went to court, I never went to any hearings, but I did fall into a horrible depression. My friend's parents wouldn't let them hang out with me. People spray painted slut on my locker at school. I had no friends, but most of all, I thought a man was in prison for loving me. When I learned he got sentenced to 10 years in prison, which he served every year of, I became deeply troubled. I was in and out of the mental hospital for years, on a slew of depression medications. Psychiatrists never talked to me about anything. I had to process it all myself. My teenage years were better, though. I transferred schools and made best friends. Graduated. But still, on the back of my mind, I felt that I was the reason a man lost 10 years of his life, until I was told he was let out of prison. A couple of years after he was out, I contacted him on Facebook. At the time, I was around 24 or 25. He told me that if I ever contacted him again, he would kill both me and my mother, that he still knows where I live. My mom still says he sold me to a sex trafficker. I was told that he had other girls my age he was talking to. Some good things happened because of my kidnapping, though. Schools all over my states started internet safety education classes. Kids were taught safety, and parents were taught how to keep kids safe. No other girls were taken by this man. So, to the man who ruined so many years of my life, I am 29 now. I am happy and healthy, and I have zero remorse that you are now listed as a level 3 sex offender, and that you were in prison for so many years. I once met up with an old friend of mine, male 22, a friend I had known for a few years prior to the meetup in November 2017. I had actually met this person on a dating site. However, as time went on, the relationship between us became strictly platonic. There were no red flags, and my gut didn't warn me, so I completely trusted this person. We met up in town, behind a bus station, on a grassy hill surrounded by trees and a tall wall. Our meeting was just to have a smoke, get a little high, and have a small catch-up. The meetup was fine. I had actually started smoking weed a few months before, so I was still relatively new to it. He had brought something new for me to try. Purple Haze. I wasn't at all anxious about trying it, as I completely trusted this person and would never believe that he would lie to me. He packed a full blunt for me, but I only managed to smoke a quarter of it. We spoke during this time about work, our previous relationships, and some random stuff. About half an hour later, I started to feel extremely lightheaded and anxious. I suddenly had this strange feeling where I didn't feel comfortable at all, and I really wanted to go home. When I asked him if I could go home, he offered to take me, but I said, "No, no, it's okay." He offered again. "Please, let me take you home. You'll be safe with me. I wouldn't hurt you." I shook my head and said, "No, thank you. I can take myself home." When I started to walk away, I felt like I was walking around on a cloud. My head became dizzy and my eyesight was a little blurry. I never felt like this before, and in time, I started to panic. When we made our way down the hill toward the bus station, I was relieved, as there were a lot of people around, so if anything happened, someone would step in. I became extremely terrified of him. I had this horrible feeling in my gut that told me to get away from him, as when I got to the bus station, I told him that I would call my taxi here and go home. His tone was no longer nice, but very stern. "I'm going to take you home now." And he began to pull at my jacket. I told him, "No, that I was going home on my own." He pulled my jacket harder and I fell against him. He pulled me into him and told me I didn't need to be scared. But I was so terrified. At this point, I started to feel paranoid and I couldn't see properly. I pushed him away from me and rubbed my eyes and called for a taxi. He tried to pull my phone from me and yelled in my face, "You ever listen? I'm taking you home." I noticed a few people had stopped and asked if I was okay. All I remember was that I wanted to go home. So a lady kindly called a taxi for me and waited with me, made sure I was okay, and helped me into it. During the time that I waited for the taxi, he kept trying to get me to come to his car with him. But the lady that looked after me told him to go home, that she was going to take me home instead. So he finally left. When I got home, I gave the taxi driver money and told him to keep the change. I didn't want to wait around, I just wanted to get into my bed because at that time, it was the only place I would feel safe. That evening, I laid in my bed for 5 hours straight, staring at the ceiling. I don't remember if I thought about anything, or if my mom came in at any time. I just remember lying in bed doing nothing until the paranoia and the sickly feeling began to wear off. I remember looking at my phone and seeing I had 32 missed calls from him, 10 voicemails left, and 50 plus messages. The messages were weird. He had sent around 20, just asking where I was and when I got home. And in one of the voicemails, he told me how he had this fantasy of taking me home while drugged up and tying me up. He wanted to blindfold me and he wanted me to submit myself to him. I freaked out and blocked him on all social media, Instagram, Snapchat, and Discord. And I blocked his number. Before the blocking, I told him if he ever contacted me again that I would call the police. I heard nothing from him for a month until I received a text from an unknown number asking me how I was. I hadn't given my number to anyone, so I ignored it. I then received another message a few minutes later saying they missed me and that they would see me soon. I asked who they were. No reply. So, creepy person who pretended to be my friend. Let's never meet again. I've spoken to some friends with regard to my story and all of them explained that weed would never make anyone feel this way, and a lot of them think I was given spice, not weed. Spice looks a lot like weed, but the effects are a lot stronger and more dangerous.